Welcome to another episode of the Three Putt Schmucks. This week, we're very excited to have John Zakala with us as a special guest. John has been practicing osteopath since graduating from Victoria University. John has combined his work as an osteopath and his personal passion for golf by gaining certification by the Titleist Performance Institute. Using combination of manual therapy and exercise rehabilitation, John aids golfers to get the best out of their body and their golf. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, guys. It's a pleasure to be on.
Good stuff. So question we normally kick off all guest episodes with is, what led you to the game of golf? How did you get into it?
That was my first boss. So working as an osteopath at my first clinic, the boss there was a golf tragic as well. And one day he took us out for a game, the team. And I thought, you know what, every bloke should own their own set of clubs. So I thought, I think I'll go to the local Drummond and buy myself a set of clubs. And once I bought the set of clubs, I was like, oh, well, I've got to play regularly now if I'm invested. And kind of haven't looked back since.
So how old were you when that happened?
When it was first boss? Yes. It wasn't when I first started working with him, but I would have been about 27, 28.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, right.
Might have been a bit later, yeah. First job after you.
Yeah, okay.
I'm not counting Red Rooster back when I was 15.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. And how did you go when you first had to go? Like, had you played many other sports before, or was that sort of the kickstarter?
Soccer and cricket growing up, and once every other year golf, borrowing dad's clubs maybe.
Yeah.
The boss was handy. He was a 6 handicapper at the time. He said, "Oh, you can hit a ball," and I was like, I didn't know what my skill level was. I was just knocking it around and didn't go too badly, and just built from there.
In terms of golf, did you always have the idea of wanting to turn that into like the profession of where you're working in that sort of space as well, or is it just come by naturally, or how did that all tie in with you and osteo and golf?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I found I loved golf already at that point and hadn't thought about really connecting it to work. And just by coincidence, other weekend hackers and or, good players would come through and we'd talk so much golf. And I was like, oh, this is great. Love talking golf. I should be seeing more of these guys. And so I sort of started doing some of the introductory courses at about that point with the TPI Institute. And then I sort of started promoting it a lot more and getting a lot more clients through the clinic, which really helped, because now when I'm chatting to the wife, if I'm getting invited to play golf, there's almost a work spin to it rather than I'm just playing golf anymore. So I can actually get out a little bit more as well. And that was a little bit of a, probably a cheeky side way of getting involved with my work as well. So I could, get more of a pass when it's work-related rather than just pleasure-related, hey.
You're onto something there.
Yeah, I thought so.
That's the dream, isn't it?
Yeah, that is the dream. Just can you just run us past the Titleist Performance Institute and what that is and how that all comes about?
Yeah, so the Titleist Performance Institute is kind of a branch of Titleist. It was founded by Dave Phillips, who is John Rahm's coach, and a chiropractor by the name of Greg Rose. And they sort of come together to basically look at how coaching was happening, how fitness was happening, the medical side with injuries, and trying to bring it all together. And, one of their fundamental concepts is like coaching sort of back in the early 90s, maybe even the start of the 2000s, was very much coach for a swing. And it's like, yep, here's Adam Scott's swing everyone loves. It's like, try to look like this and you'll be a better golfer, with not a lot of sort of analysis within that. And what they sort of come up with was their level one course is looking at how well golfers move, because if you can't move like Adam Scott to begin with, trying to copy his swing is going to be chasing your tail a fair way. And, they use these examples of why change Jim Furyk's swing? Like, he was very, very successful on tour and, his body allowed him to swing that way. As long as, the interval of impact is running well, then it's repeatable and go with it.
Yeah.
Was more their motto. And so they brought that all and expanded it, and they've got streams now in golf coaching, golf medical, golf fitness, online components, and their top tier stuff is in person in Oceanside, just outside of San Diego.
Okay.
Yeah, and I was really lucky enough to go there last year and complete the level 3 medical in Oceanside in November, which was great. Got to speak to Dave, John Rahm's coach, and Greg. These guys are really, really knowledgeable.
Wow, that's awesome. So he's still John Rahm's coach now as well, is he?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, how good's that? That would have been awesome to pick his brains.
Yeah, it was lots of chats, and, because it was the medical course, he put a video on. John Rahm's got this little man cave that has all these recovery type facilities in there, infrared sauna, cold plunge, his physio or osteo goes down there. Just going blank on the name now. Why has this lost me? The high pressure room.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, hyper,
chamber, thank you. Yeah. Had one of them in there as well. They're playing golf as much as they do, and all sorts of repetitive strain injuries can happen, and the performance element as well. So that's a lot of where I do some of my work too. It's kind of like the in through the door is somebody who's injured, and then we do a lot of work and go, well, if you move better, the game should be easier as well. So we do a lot from that's where the performance and the injury kind of merges.
That was something I wanted to bring up because I played last week and then I hit probably close to 100 balls in the net the next day, and then Tim came around the next day, I probably hit 150. And I woke up on day 4 and went to play golf and felt like I'd been hit by a truck.
Oh, for sure, that rotation movement,
Yeah, I don't think I warmed up until the 18th, and it was like a horrible day.
It's like any workout, isn't it? Like if your body isn't used to – like not just the one movement, but how often you do it as well. It's like, playing golf once a week's one thing. And, if you think about it, it's, 70-ish full swings maybe. Like, whereas if you're in the back beating balls full swing and you do it a few days in a row, all of a sudden you've had quadruple the amount of swings you'd normally have in 3 days. Like that's going to fatigue all the muscles and, lead to some soreness at a minimum for sure.
Is there ways, do you think, that like for the layman, right, for people – like myself, Tim's a little more across it than I am. But for the average guy who's not really across how it all works, like is there simple things you could do for preparation for the golf swing if you plan on abusing your body a little bit like that?
As in like a warm-up?
Yeah. Like a warm-up or like a strategy to not feel so horrible on day 4?
Look, it's going to be a tough one to not feel horrible on day 4 if you're always – if there's always a big gap between 4 days in a row, like a golf trip or, a really big practice block, then that's kind of like lifting weights when you haven't lifted weights for a while, because you'll fatigue, and a small amount of fatigue you'll never get any knock-on from. But if it's sporadically just, 4 days off the back of only once a week, you'll end up feeling a little bit tight regardless. Stretching is the main key. Like from a golf swing perspective, generally speaking, we refer to the glutes as the king. And the abs is the queen, right? And they're the two areas that, if you can do some prep for them beforehand and some stretching and things afterwards, you're going to certainly dampen that effect.
For the golf swing, is it?
Correct.
The glutes?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, hip rotation and the way that the glutes power is the king of the golf swing.
With the clients that you have, John, have you got people who are in a professional space, or are they just hackers or just all types of clients? Do you have... across that sort of range.
Across all of them. Obviously, there's so many more amateurs than there are elite golfers or professional golfers. So I treat the guys who, sit all day at a desk and then go and play on the weekend, as well as some of the people, I've got some friends and some elite guys who competed at the Vic Open recently that I work with as well. And so it's different for all of them, athletes versus the amateurs. But essentially, we're trying to, keep them all moving as well as we can and dealing with what they're coming in with and creating customized plans from there.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think you mentioned it before, like one of the main things is that rotation through the swing. Is there sort of a pretty common reoccurring theme with, say, like the players like Tom and I, or players who aren't in that professional space but are coming in with this like similar issues?
Absolutely. Lower back's the biggest one. Lower back's the biggest one, and it's often linked to immobility through the hips. So if you think about, when your hips are turning and things in the golf swing, like obviously like the right part of your hip moving backwards during the backswing and then the left with the follow through, if that's sort of restricted in any way, which can be painless, then that means that your lower back will take on that extra sort of load. And so it's a really common one for that lower back to get a bit sore from golf. And often what happens is, I don't know about you guys and your jobs, but I mean, most people sit behind a desk for a living. I'm lucky enough not to, which I think is good, but sitting all day will tighten hips up all the time. And unfortunately also almost deactivate or weaken the glutes a little. And then you go to play golf and your back hurts and we blame the golf. Whereas I'd probably say, oh, let's not blame the golf. Let's, you know, you're a bit tight, probably not as sort of strong through the glutes as what you went to. And then you go and throwing a club around, that'll put a bit of strain in the back. We want people playing golf. And so that's what we'll work on from there.
I'm feeling every bit of that as you were explaining, like the hips and the glutes. And I was like, that is all the feels I've got going on at the moment.
Especially after, I heard the podcast you guys did with your net in the backyard too. Once you get a rhythm going and you're smashing balls there, it's pretty easy for a couple of hundred to go by for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially when there's a few beers in the mix and you're probably swinging a little loosely.
I don't think the beers never hurt golf at all, did they?
No, I don't think so.
I either swing free out or don't care if I'm mishitting it as much.
Exactly right. Yeah, I guess at the end of the golf game when we're stretching, maybe we can include a couple of beers in it as well, because usually once we finish golf, we're not thinking about stretching, are we, Tom?
19th hole for sure.
Yeah, never. I'm more thinking, I'm very curious as to what we can do prior as far as like for stretching and releasing. So would you say it's like mainly glutes that would assist with that, do you think?
Look, it all depends on how much time you're going to prepare for. Like the difference between, you know, sort of punters on a weekend or, you know, squeezing in a game is how much time you've got. And it's kind of like if you've got 5 minutes, I'd be saying, you know, doing some squats, you know, gently swinging in the net or, you know, taking practice swings just to, you know, at slower tempo and building up. That's probably going to be your best bet if you've got no time. You know, if you've got 20 minutes, half an hour, then it's absolutely, you can do a little bit of stretching. Often there's band work that people do, you know, obviously, you know, the range beforehand. And so you kind of customize it that way as much as you can, although I'm often guilty of running from the car and straight to the tee box. So it happens.
Yeah, you're using three or four holes to warm up. Yeah.
Yeah. Just hoping you can keep it in play on them ones.
Just let's pull it back a bit because I want to sort of find out more about what an osteopath does and the certain roles that they do. Is because we had a bit of a look on your website and there's a few of you guys that they're at your clinic that you have. Do you all sort of specify into one certain path, or do you all sort of have that sort of general branch of things that you do as an osteopath? And what you would focus on more on your role as well?
Okay. Yeah, so that the team we've got at the clinic there, like all the osteopaths have to go through the same training to get registered. So when they graduate, you've got somebody who's generally, you know, well-educated in managing just musculoskeletal health issues. You know, so we see a lot of people with upper back and neck strain from, you know, working at desks all day, you know, sports injuries across all sports, obviously. You know, we do a lot of work with pregnant women as well. Just with lower back and that sort of thing there. Lower back pain is a common one for everybody. So whether or not you're in a manual sort of a job or whether you're sitting down too long, that tends to be common. So everyone will start out quite, I guess, generalized and there's, you know, and then a lot of us go off and sort of find niches, probably the best way to put it. Obviously, with myself and my clinic, I'm a little bit more so into the golf space. And we've got a couple of the osteopaths there that have gone and done further education in, you know, all things pregnancy, for example.
And do you have like reoccurring clients, or is it more just like you'll see them, you'll treat them and then give them certain exercises that they should be doing and move on? Or is it you have some people that you go, yeah, we'll need to see you a few times here?
Yeah, very good question. I mean, very dependent on what the injury is, for example. Like, you know, if someone has, you know, just strained their lower back, you know, they're going to be going from what the worst pain they've ever had to fairly well recovered within sort of the space of sort of 3 to 5 weeks. Whereas if let's say their disc has been injured quite severely, you know, that can be a minimum of 12 weeks through to, you know, I've seen them last 6 months to a year being quite problematic as well. And then often what happens is the reason like a bad injury like that one would often be a number of predisposing factors that would have been in the background probably prior to us meeting them. And yeah. in that case, we advise things like, okay, so now that we are at least got you back to where you want to be, whether it be golf or any other sport or what you're doing, you know, they'll often see us in a almost maintaining fashion, you know, trying to keep fitter and stay ahead of the curve in terms of things like flexibility. So, you know, similar to what I said with the golf before, like if your hips are, you know, prone to getting stiff, then that's the sort of person who they get stiff in the background and then on the weekend they do the gardening, the golf or something like that, and then their lower back hurts on Monday. It's like it probably wasn't the gardening or the golf on its own. It was a couple of things. And so combination of exercises to maintain yourself, you know, the manual therapy that we do find a lot of people use this in a kind of optimizing their health fashion as well as injury management.
Yeah, fascinating.
That's a massive thing for me is stiff hips. I'll go for a run and then I'll sit in the office for a couple of hours. Then I'm on site for a few hours, then back in the car.
Oh, for sure.
Try to swing a golf club in the afternoon and it's like, it's just the hips and the lower back. They're always tight.
Yeah, it would be hard. Like, it's like, you know, I'll often talk to my clients in and around like stiff hips and things. Do you guys sit down for work?
No, like, I'm a builder.
Okay, great.
Yeah, no, yeah. I'm a personal trainer as well. So, yeah.
You're mobile. We're on our feet. Perfect. Well,
yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, most of the time I speak to people, like they actually spend 8+ hours in a chair a day. And it's like, I sort of say, I'm pretty lucky. Like I probably don't have to stretch as much as they do because if you look at my kind of half an hour interval, I sit for 5 minutes, I go through exercises with them and have them on the table. So I'm changing things all the time in little versions. And we're probably more designed for that with the way we move as opposed to, you know, either being seated or any one activity all the time. You know, so that's where you're. Repetitive strain type injuries can come in if you're asking your body to do the one exact movement all the time.
Yeah, exactly. And do you would you think there'd be some certain signs that you could pick up on as an individual if you feel like you're like coming towards an injury? Like, yeah, you might be feeling it, but are there certain sort of signs or symptoms? Like, say, if we're out playing on the golf, like if we're feeling tight, do you feel like that's going to lead to an injury, or is there certain things that as a golfer we should be looking out for?
Absolutely. Tightness and even low levels of pain probably get over ignored. It's like, oh, that's just a little bit of stiffness, not to worry about that. It's like your body's pretty good at compensating. Like that's how we're, you know, we've got a lot of moving parts. It's a pretty good unit. And it's at a certain point, if, you know, I used the analogy before, like let's say it's with golf, if your hips are a little bit stiff, then that will put more pressure on your low back. But if your upper back moved really well, it might not necessarily lead to an injury just yet because you've got your upper back and your lower back chipping in for the hips.
Yeah.
What we can find is if you've got stiff hips that, you know, aren't rotating, we got measurements for this sort of stuff too in terms of when we look at someone going, oh, yep, that's that a range of motion would fall into functional and that will fall into they should move better. But if you had like stiff hips and a stiff upper back, now you've got the lower back in the middle doing all of it, which is a really common pattern.
Yeah.
And so that's where I would say when people are under my care ongoingly, I'd be like, look, once I show you a few things and we get you moving pretty well, once you know what your body feels like when it's actually going well, you get better at going, hang on a second, this isn't optimal. And it might not be an injury and it might only be a few days, but you have a plan to action that so it could never go forward. So that's a lot of the work we do is even just that ongoing education. And, you know, if I see someone and watch them move, it's a little easier to go, okay, yep. You know, for example, it's like, oh, with Tom, we find it here and here get tighter. So he's got some go-to exercises. And so you probably recognize, bit of stiffness on the golf course. For me, I find if I do X, Y, and Z, that would, you know, help me there and then. Or when I get home, I'll need to concentrate on this. Otherwise, I'm staring down the barrel of the lower back starting to get a little sore and risk of injury.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah. See a photo of us on social media next week stretching on a green somewhere.
I like it.
All spread out.
Yeah, tag me in that one.
Love it. Just, I know I'm taking over here a bit, Tom, but just one more thing.
No, you're right.
With say myself or Tom came into your clinic and we were talking about these sort of issues that you just mentioned. Would you get us to do a golf swing and look at how we move through that, or would you just sort of, is that what you sort of do with your clients to get them?
Not really, no. I would actually first go through just basic ranges of motion through the whole area there. I would look at a golf swing in conjunction with coaches. Like, you know, I love golf, but I'm not a golf coach by any standard.
Yeah.
And so there's a few key things in a swing that are never okay. Like there's one particular characteristic called reverse spine angle when you end up tilted in a certain position, which is very correlated to causing a back injury at some point. So if someone's got a video or something like that, I'll look at it and look if that's there. But generally speaking, you'd be able to not guess if it's there, but it's the way I would help to get rid of it, let's say, would be often that would be in compensation to restriction or lack of mobility elsewhere. But the first thing we'd actually do is take you through a staged assessment and work out which areas move well, which ones don't, which areas move maybe with pain, and then put a system together to go, okay, this is what we need to look to do in the short term to help with an injury. This is what we need to look to longer term to actually help prevent this from coming back and stage it from that perspective.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm just taking it all in. There's lots of information here that's just unreal.
Yeah.
Just writing some notes.
It's pretty good. Especially the golfers, and definitely probably more at the elite level guys, when they come in and we sort of say, okay, actually this doesn't move very well, even if it's just from a injury prevention perspective, if we can sort of show them that this is how they move when they started and this is how they move when they're doing all their exercises, they'll usually find, oh, good, they feel better. But it's also because there's so many subtle movements in golf, they can feel like their swing's more of their natural swing. So, you know, you've got all these moving parts. If, you know, day to day, if something is not at, you know, that person's normal or optimal, that's often, I think all golfers would have felt it, you know, when you're like, why is it I'm swinging the golf club and it feels so foreign. Like the other day, it's like it felt like I couldn't swing it the wrong way. Now I can't find this slot to save myself. And not like it's a guarantee, and I'm certainly not the person to analyze the swing itself, but that can be the reason you feel like you're telling your body to do the same thing and not getting the exact same result.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes complete sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny as well. Like I've always had this kind of attitude, I guess, toward getting help with movement. I've played sport my whole life, but I only ever went to get help with movement if I had an injury. I'd always wait until I was injured. I'd be like sore and stuck. I'd be playing tournaments and stuff and just be absolutely wrecked and be like, whatever, I've just got to warm up and get into it. It's fine.
Yeah.
And it's,
we're not really well educated on it unless you're at the elite level and you've got access to it, you know, to people helping you. It's kind of like, got to get on with it, don't you? You're absolutely right. Like definitely we spend a lot of time telling people, look, you want to figure out what your best is and how you got there. And within reason, how can we keep it there as best we can? Because if you're feeling your best and you're moving your best and you know what that feels like and what it looks like, and we can show you that, then we're decreasing the risk of all the stuff that can get in the way. You know, obviously things can happen, but that gives us the best insurance policy.
Can we just chat about John Rahm just for a second here? I'm not sure how much you've probably seen his swing quite a bit, but he's got quite a shallow backswing in most of his shots. Is that just something that he has, do you reckon he's just learned as a kid growing up golf, or would that be a body mechanics issue that he would have, or is that something that you managed to ask his coach about?
The coach and John Rahm have been pretty public with this. I believe he was born with a foot issue that had to be operated on, and his mobility through like one of his feet and his hips is terrible. And so hence the look of his swing. So, and you know, they did break that down a lot in terms of how he generates his power. And he's got a really good, on the TPI, I think it's a TPI socials page, but he sort of, it is a, like a not as long backswing. And he gets his speed by then creating separation while he's still going, like, you know, if he's still going back with his backswing, his hips are already moving sort of forward, like in opposite directions, which then creates an elastic, like, kind of effect, which he does really well and still produces above average tour speed with that motion.
Yeah, wow. Yeah.
And so that, you know, and he's a perfect example of why the first time I met Dave, his coach, was back in 2018 when I did my first course. And he spoke, you know, so John Rahm hadn't quite got to the levels he had currently. And he sort of made the comment, it's like, yep, you can't let, you know, any golf coaches change your swing at the moment, because when it's on, it is on. And so we just need to make sure that we, you know, allow it to function as best we can so you can play your best golf. And they're also really honest with the fact that it's like, you know, at their levels, they're talking serious, serious money. And so, you know, just working around, keeping him active, getting his physio, getting his exercises done so he can do that to the best of his ability is, you know, it's kind of, well, I suppose it's similar to us as well. Like, you know, you got to work. So just make sure that you put a lot of investment in your body when that's the thing providing you your income.
Yeah, especially, at that level, that's what you got to do, isn't it? Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
It's amazing, like you mentioned earlier, about how that, like, the mechanics around the swing being more personalized is, like, quite a recent thing.
Certainly with golf coaching, absolutely. I mean, you know, I don't know when the first launch monitors came in, but they, you know, it was just watching the ball move. They just coached it from that. Like, you know, it's not my realm. I'm not far from a coach, but once, you know, launch monitors came in and actually showed us exactly what the club does to produce certain things and how that can be mimicked with different looking swings, that really helped. It's like, well, hang on a minute. You can have like a John Rahm swing and an Adam Scott swing and go, well, that ball's being hit at this speed, so that's pretty prime. It's, you know, it's launching at these angles and spinning all the optimal rates, even though the swings look super different. It's like, well, now it's data. You can't, it's not subjective anymore. It was objective. And so that's where they found, generally speaking, the swings can look really different, but the way that the golfers time all their movements in terms of things like the backswing into transition into follow through, that's something called the kinematic sequence. It tends to be that kinematic sequence, no matter what the golf swing looks like, seems a lot more across golfers, meaning that the way their motions all happen, they tend to sync up even if the swing looks different.
Fascinating.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
I love that. Tom's data brain is going off the hook here.
Just spinning. Yeah,
that goes well beyond me. They measure that stuff with 3D sort of markers on people. So they're like, you know, they're watching like the hand path move and what the hips are doing and at what times it's all happening and when it all fires. And then you see this graph, which I'd be pretending like I could, you know, wax lyrical about that. But I do remember knowing that they look similar.
Yeah.
It's like the Avatar suits when they're making the movie.
That'll work, yeah.
That's right. Yeah, spot on.
Oh, if you see some of that stuff, it's crazy. Yeah, the TPI socials is really good for that. Like, they're wearing wires and all sorts of stuff on them to look at all the movements really closely.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Makes me feel better about anything that's unorthodox that I do now. Just going like, that's fine. It's the way I move.
Yeah, exactly right.
You can stay the way it is.
It definitely could be. And that's, you know, some of the coaches, that's where they're getting around it too. So we'll have, that's the idea, is to make a team around people, especially the elite guys are already ahead of this. But even if you get coaching, you know, if a coach is saying, oh, hang on a minute, like, do you find it hard to get into this position? Like, that's where they're like, oh, okay, maybe we need to figure out something else about how to help someone with their swing. Like, you know, if you can do it pretty, I know this is a podcast, no one's going to see this, but your shoulder range, like your shoulders are kind of stuck and they can't get back here and they only get to here, like, that means you are going to have a swing path that's probably limited in its ability to, you know, get inside, for example. And so, you know, working your bollocks off to, you know, try to hit this big sweeping draw if your hips don't rotate and get into position, or if your shoulders are stuck, it's going to be hard work.
Massively
hard
work.
So what you're saying is we've got an excuse for slicing now.
Power fades, we call them.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. John, talk to us a little bit more about your golf. Like, do you get out much? Do you have a handicap? Do you have a home course that you play at? What's your golf look like?
My golf, my coach just said this the other day. How do you still play off 10, you Muppet? And you're the best 10 handicapper I've met. And you're a bandit. And I'm like, well, trust me, I want it to go down. But now I play off a 10. And I think I could just mentally not be focused and lose some rhythm, which is what keeps me there. But, you know, I've hit some good ones recently. I think I could dip into the single figures by the end of the year. Yeah, the home track is, I play with Dad every Thursday. So that's the home track I've joined. I got his band of merry men that are a few jokers. I think they might actually hold me back as well a little bit.
Okay.
But yeah, we play with them every week, and I probably get out 2-3 times a month on top of that with clients and things as well, and people I've met via socials and this sort of stuff. Like I said, work.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. Yeah. And do you ever catch yourself sort of self-diagnosing yourself when you're out there, if you feel like you're a little off in the body and you're just having a bit of a thought to yourself about what's happening with my body here?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's actually a bit frustrating, actually. I'm pretty flexible, and like mobility-wise, when I go through these same tests that I'm talking about, like I'm pretty handy at them. And yep. I've had these chats with other golfers significantly better than myself, and I'm like, you know what? I think I'm at that level where it allows me to get into any position you want me to, including all the wrong ones that I don't know how to coordinate. Whereas if maybe I was stiff somewhere, it wouldn't allow me to get there in the first place. It'd actually limit the choices my body had. So that's the excuse I'm running with anyway.
Yeah,
I tend to be pretty lucky. I'm pretty lucky injury-wise, I think, because of that, being, you know, pretty mobile. No, when I'm playing the game, I'm just kind of like, I'd love to find the middle of the club at some point is generally what I'm thinking.
Wouldn't we all?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Could you recall the best ever score you've had?
Of course I can. I've shot a 77.
There you go.
Yeah, of course you can.
Which golfer doesn't know their best score? Yeah,
exactly right.
Yeah, even I would have said it with this. I would have said the same thing even if it was 102. Yeah, 102.
100%. We can definitely recall our worst days as well. That's for sure.
Oh yeah, I want to. Yeah, them ones are easy to forget. Until I look up the top 20 on the Golf Australia app.
Yeah,
you guys have got handicaps as well.
Yep.
Not Golf Australia. We don't have golf link number handicaps.
Gotcha.
We're using an app at the moment because we're not members of any clubs as yet.
Cool.
But we're both mid-20s at the moment.
Fun. That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a roller coaster.
Yeah, the business partner I work with, his mates play some golf, but I kind of got him into it this time around, and he's got the bug as well. He's a mid 20 knocker, and
yeah,
you know, he's anytime he can, he's showing me. He goes, look at this. This is what I've worked out in the backyard. I think I've got it sorted. It's like, oh geez, you know, I'm not sure anyone ever gets it sorted, mate. But we'll go test that theory out real soon.
Yeah,
John, we're saying this on the weekend when we're playing in the nets, and we're saying, I think we've unlocked something here. I think we're onto something. The whole weekend was just saying, yeah.
Block, yeah. It's just getting used to finding the middle of the club. If you can, you know, the more you drill that feeling into the swing, the more likely you might be able to do it later on. I think it's true.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm the range specialist.
I was chatting with the mate that I played with earlier in the week, and I was saying how I think I shot 103, but it's a bit of a difficult course. But I was saying how that now feels like a bad round, and I'd left a lot out there. So it's, I think there was a breakthrough, Tim. I don't want to discount our progress in the weekend.
I think my first handicap when I started playing with the boss would have been about 21.
Yep.
And I was playing with my business partner and a mate of his recently, and like I said, they're sort of knocking around similar to you guys as well. And they did say, like, oh, it must be great, you know, getting down to 10 and playing off 10. And I'm like, okay, yeah, it's funny you said that. I go, I think the way golf works, it's like I don't feel any better now than I did back then. And I'm pretty sure, like, you don't have to look too far on YouTube. I think Tiger says the same thing, like, I think no matter what level you're at, you're like, oh, geez, shot a good score today, but they were left a whole lot of shots out there. Like, that's like the 19th hole should be in a plaque somewhere.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it happens every time.
Definitely.
Yeah.
It's good to know it'll never stop. Just never, just always chasing.
No, you are. You're always like, okay. You get to one, you're like, well, if I got here, why can't I go any further? I think that's what everyone always says.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it.
I think that's why the game's awesome as well. I really love the fact that you can kind of be playing with somebody of any skill level, right, and, you know, playing your own game and kind of like in sort of just enjoying it, if that makes sense. And, you know, two people could walk off going, oh, how good's this? And, you know, one, it doesn't even matter what they shot. It's relative to them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you ever find yourself in situations where you're playing with someone significantly better than you and you lift your game? Or if you're playing with someone who's at a much lower level than you, that you can kind of slip? Have you ever been in situations like that?
Oh, you definitely can. Like I said, my weekly crew might be one of the reasons I struggle to get off 10, being the best player in that group. But I mean, I've got some mates that play off +3. Yeah. So they'll regularly shoot under par. A lot of scratch golfers, good friend of mine's working towards trying to get sort of on the tour. So he's obviously really good. Yeah, you do play better when you're around them. You just see the way they get around the course, the way they handle themselves, that sort of thing. Like that's definitely a hot tip. Like I play with them enough, but wish I played with them more. I was really lucky last year. My current coach, Ben Warden, who also plays on and tour, is kind of a friend of mine. We went out and played at Moona Links, and he kind of gave me a kind of a coaching lesson while we were sort of playing as well, and brought out some pretty good golf, like just the mentality aspect of it all. You know, kind of trying to keep me calm and focused, make it really simple in terms of going, here's the target, like here's the shot, you know, execute. And, you know, I produced a pretty good golf that day as well, just with the kind of mental things and the mindset he brought into it, which was that was really fun. Well, he shot a lazy 6-under or something.
Yeah, that's been, I think, one of horrendous. The biggest breakthroughs for Tim and I, because we get pretty fired up pretty easily at small things, and it could ruin a day for us.
Well, I've made it a – this is a funny story to some degree, especially my background, but I learned a lesson really the harsh way about 2 years ago, and I've sort of said I have to tell this story every time it's possible to come up to remind me not to get necessarily too angry. But anyway, we're playing at the home track, and I wasn't having a great day. And to be fair, I caught the ball a little thin, and it was greenside, so it definitely didn't need to be have any sort of a dummy spit. But I've gone to launch the 9-iron, and as I've flung that with my body, I actually dislocated my own shoulder, and you know, fell down like a sack of spuds. And lucky I knew what it was and things like that, so I was able to kind of like relocate it myself, just knowing what I'd done. And I was pretty ginger for several weeks, and you know, got the rehab started pretty quick. But I was like, there's a lot more things in life you should be getting angry at than a golf shot. So I've been significantly better since then. And the other thing about that is, it's like you can't play good golf angry. Like, you don't have to look too far. Everybody says the same thing. It's kind of like you're allowed to kind of be unhappy in the moment. But like, I know every time I've shot anywhere near a good score, it's always like, if I'm putting for six, if I'm putting for a birdie, or if it's a chip shot to, I don't know, for my sixth or to get on in two, whatever it might be, it's the shot's the shot. What it means to you is the score happens after all the shots. Like, you know, I've listened to tons of podcasts, read some books and things on mentality, and it's all within that scope where you kind of like play the shot for its merits, try to make it the best shot you've hit at the time, and then it doesn't matter what it is afterwards, because by that point you've kind of walked to the ball and you're doing the process again. So, you know, I think that's certainly helps me. Like, it does happen, you know. I think today I missed a birdie putt while Dad was chatting in the way, which he tends to do, and I missed it on my own merit, but certainly, you know.
Yeah, you can blame him, though.
If he's gonna give me an out, like,
I'm taking it.
I'm like, you know, give him a clip on the way through. trying to keep it within reason, but you know, it does happen.
Yeah, John. Just you might have sort of just given it away, but if you did have any sort of advice or any tips for people of, say, Tom and I's caliber of in the sort of mid 20s, looking to improve our handicap and get to say that ten range, would you have any sort of advice or any tips that you could give us that we could implement?
Yeah, lessons. Get lessons.
Yeah,
definitely. Like you mentioned before, you were talking about analyzing my own body and things, and I probably should have looked at my own swing a little bit more. I wasn't really big on looking at it. I was trying to, because I was like, I can't look at it while I'm playing, so I want to be able to feel what I'm doing. But some of the lessons I've had, you know, you hear a lot of people talk about feel versus real, And it's kind of like, you know, when you're trying to feel like you're doing something, you know, a lot of these coaches these days, even just with the camera, it's like, you know, trying to get you to do a movement that'll help, and you'll try it and you'll feel like you've swung a completely different swing, and then you look at two of them side by side and you've changed nothing. Mm. And so that's where it's like, wow, like if you are trying to make a swing change or, you know, get a particular characteristic out of your swing that is holding you back from consistency, like I think lessons with a qualified coach is the way to go. You know, tips from me, it's kind of like, I would say, you know, better ball striking. That'll be the best one. But I'd say the way you do that is get a coach to work out why you're not doing it well, and then go that way.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
For sure. So if people want to get around what you're up to, where can they go to look?
So, yeah, my socials on my Instagram is golfperformance.osteo. And my clinic website is www.cornerclinicosteopathy.com.au. And through either one of them means you can message me directly and find my details or go through the clinic that way. You know, I'm doing, you know, video calls with certain clients who just want mobility routines done, so we can assess them online if we can actually, you know, get some room to see their whole body, or if they're close enough to the clinic, they come and see me in person. You know, really love working with golfers, so I'd be happy to do all that.
Awesome. Yeah, good on you, John. It's been a pleasure having you on and picking your brains and finding out about what you do. And yeah, it's been really insightful. So thank you.
Thank you so much for having me, guys. I love talking golf. I never stop if you don't stop me.
No worries. You might have to come back on then, and we'll carry on.
We'll see you next week.
Done. You name the time. Yeah. Thanks, Tim. Thanks, Tom. Really appreciate it.
Appreciate it.
No worries. Thank you.